Hello and welcome to the Astana International Financial Center's Legal Tech Podcast with your host, Mark Beer. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Alessandro Palumbo, one of the greatest thinkers when it comes to smart contracting and online dispute resolution, and indeed the founder of probably one of the most exciting technology companies that I've seen in many years, Jour. So welcome, Alessandro, to the AIFC Law Tech Podcast.
Hello, Mark. Hello, everyone. I'm really glad to be here with you today for having this chat. So I'm really honored, and I do believe that the work at IFC is going to be brilliant in terms of legal technology. So happy to be here.
Fantastic. Tell me a little bit about what do you think the future holds? What does it hold for online dispute resolution, smart contracts? Has the world changed in the last year or so? Do you see opportunity? Do you see threats? Tell me a bit about how you see the future.
Look, this is a really interesting question. I think that, you know, as you know, this COVID, this pandemic made the current scenario quite, you know, problematic for many fields, also the legal ones. So we have the honor to work with multiple, you know, jurisdictions in Asia, Europe, or South America. So speaking with many lawyers, institutions, I think that it's clear that there has been a huge acceleration of the digitalization processes. And of course, sadly, because the COVID is something absolutely absolutely not glad of, but I see clearly in the last year a really, really impactful digitalization of the processes in the legal sector, also in terms of mindset. So something that I always say is that we are at Jour now really going fast in terms of, you know, adoption and growth. And the mindset we are encountering is more open to digital and innovation. So in terms of online dispute resolution and smart contracts, there will be an acceleration. Of course, I would like to do a few remarks, really, really quick. And for saying that, if you see the dispute resolution field in most of the countries, I am originally Italian. It has been a massive problem due to the COVID. So even the public courts realized how much important it would be to solve online disputes. This is something to be, remarked. And I think this awareness today will bring major effects in 6 months, 2 years, and even 5 years. We are on that field. We are releasing a platform on that field. So I'm quite, let's say, really in the middle of a lot of conversations about these topics. At the same time, smart contracts can be, in my opinion, something that will, unfortunately, again, but benefit out of that. In terms of smart contracts, Mark, I think that there are still technological issues to be solved to get mass adoption. That's something that I think it's the time to discuss properly, especially now in this phase where eventually there is the right common ground base for this technology to become impactful. To be specific, a smart contract is brilliant not only because automates relationships, business relationships, but because a smart contract automates, again, contractor relationships in an auditable way. So the real power of blockchain and smart contracts is auditability. Automation was already in place with normal servers and centralized servers. So my take is that the major need on that side will be to have a proper oracle system. What is an oracle? Any oracle is a component of software-based that connects a smart contract to external data. So, for example, we could do today a smart contract between you and me, where I have to provide to you a website, a new website for you, Mark Beer, or for IFC, and there are some KPIs or service level agreements. But the crucial part is, if in the smart contract there is also money, so there is an escrow, how does a software, even if it is, on the blockchain, to know if the obligation for providing you the website has been properly executed? So we need oracles that can be human-based or software-based for communicating this kind of stuff. So to recap, I think digitalization is a major trend in the legal sector. Online dispute resolution will rise up really strongly, in my opinion, in the public and in the private sector. We hope to provide a solution which is, again, multi-jurisdiction and based and network-based. So we hope to cover as many jurisdictions as possible in the short time period. For the smart contracts, I see this problem to attach really the market in the next 12, 24 months. I think there will be a bit more time, but I see that the interest is still really high, even in these bad times where, you know, budgets of companies, even big ones, are cut. So expenditures for POCs or innovation programs might be have cut. Still, interest in smart contracts area is really high.
Let's just explore. Let's stick on smart contracts for now. I think what would be helpful is explain in basic terms what they are. Let me know if you know any lawyers who can draft them. And let me know if there are any courts who have, or arbitration centres who have any experience of analysing and determining disputes and then enforcing their award on a smart contract.
These are three amazing questions. So I kindly explained already what a smart contract is. I will come back later, but the most interesting question is, yes, I know a lot of lawyers, of course, but I do not know, of course, a lawyer that would be able to properly at least write down a smart contract and deploy it on a specific DLT, on a specific, to make it work out, to keep it simple, okay? So this is really interesting because there is a huge interest by, you know, lawyers, law firms, even public institutions, but the skills for properly creating smart contracts, unfortunately, rely more on developers. So my personal take on this topic, Mark, is that I don't see really in 20 years lawyers to develop their own smart contracts. Like as per today, I don't see developers always creating websites, simple ones from the scratch. You maybe can use, you know, some white label, or you can use, for example, WordPress, which is, again, a huge, huge, of course, is a huge software and platform for creating a website. Let's say it's like a puzzle where you can find components of the website, and developers today might use WordPress. I'm trying to keep it really simple for letting anyone to understand that. So my take is that we need solutions like that, in that direction, to let lawyers understanding the technology, but to understand what a smart contract is doesn't mean to be able to properly develop from the scratch. And that's fine to me. That's fine to me. About courts and smart contracts, neither. I know for sure, especially we discussed that with several people. I don't think there is wide jurisprudence at the present day already on smart contract technology. And if I can tell you my general idea, because at this stage nobody can say for sure what is going to happen, I think there will be two major points on the, you know, court, on the, let's say, the activity of judges in regarding to smart contracts. One maybe activity will be regarding on a superficial level, the smart contracts technology. So eventually there will be simply contracts that will be executed by a smart contract. So in that case, at the end of the day, it doesn't change that so much, right? Because you have still whatever was yesterday in place, but today you have a new instrument for executing the contract. So in that case, I don't think really judges, laws, jurisprudence will have to do, you know, amazing steps forward. But there is also a second, you know, area, which is more regarding, you know, eventually not typical business relationships as per today we know, but just executed on smart contract technology. There might be also typologies of new, let's say, architectures of new organizations. Let's think for one second about decentralized autonomous organizations that, I mean, are a kind of complex concept, but essentially it's just like imagine to put the governance of a company on blockchain, And imagine to put that in terms that it's the software to ask you as a participant, as a shareholder maybe, what's your opinion, to get, put some inputs and blah, blah, blah. In this kind of scenario, there might happen that some key juridical, legal concepts might not fit what the technology today and tomorrow will enable. So on that side, I think for the next 10 years, we will have really, really interesting, let's say, activities going on. And even, I mean, for non-tech enthusiasts, from a pure legal perspective, these topics will be really of major interest.
Lawyers can't draft smart contracts. Judges can't deal with smart contracts. And presumably clients can't read smart contracts in the main. So why are you so optimistic about them?
I'm optimistic because in the first area I was mentioning, at the end of the day, smart contracts will be just, you know, tools for executing contracts. So at the end of the day, there is no need of major improvements, or there won't be in place enormous, unavoidable doubts, skepticism, FUD. On the other hand, by the second area I was mentioning during this example of DAOs, Decentralized Autonomous Organization, Mark, I'm optimistic about in the next 10 years and 20 years of this kind of solutions to take place, for one simple reason, because to a certain extent, they might be able to work without, I mean, really reducing a lot the chances of dispute resolution need, for example. So in that cases, there might be some areas where there will be like bubbles, you know, aquarium closed regarding the external world. So they might be proven working well. One example today is regarding DeFi, decentralized finance. If you see, for example, how they work with stable coins. So that's why I'm optimistic.
I'm going to interrupt you because I think where you're going with this is transformative. You're not talking about add-ons. You're not talking about incremental change. You know, you're not talking about the blacksmith putting one more nail into the shoe into the horseshoe, right? You're talking about the invention of the motor car. You're talking about something which makes lawyers redundant, something which makes courts redundant. You're talking about the wisdom of the crowd to determine policy and to determine issues through the DAO model, that consensual dispute resolution. Do you think that's possible? Is that what sort of timescale do you think it would take for any sort of ecosystem to move towards an environment where contracting is efficient, enforceable, people can code, people can draft the contracts themselves without the need for lawyers, people can solve their problems through using a sort of wisdom of the crowd, broad jury system versus a defined individual determining what the law says. How far are we away from that?
I don't think for this complete transformative change will take 5 years. It will take more than five, probably more than 10. For a definitive, complete, you know, transformative change. And the reason why might be something, okay, let's make this kind of brainstorming together. I am always surprised when I use my iPhone Apple, I'm not promoting Apple, by the way, because I was thinking sometimes, look, at the end of the day, it was 2007 when you know, Jobs introduced iPhone. We are only, let's say, 13 years later. So if we put this small, really, tiny data in a wider timeline and we zoom out, I'm always fascinated by this thing. If you think in 13 years, completely our user experience, our way of life, thanks to a good smartphone changed completely. And 13 years, it was not that much. In this case, I see one friction more. And the major friction is that iPhone arrived when, for example, internet was already advanced, and then the app store were able to explode in 2000, let's say, for example, 10, 12. In this case, we are using a new technology which has to be, you know, further implemented. For example, the Oracle problem, it, in my opinion, it's the bigger one. So this is one friction. Second, how can I say, really, there is eventually a friction in terms of awareness. So blockchain and smart contracts are really useful when the people are aware about how the processes behind the interface are managed. Why? Because nobody will be able, a non-technical person, to know if there is a real transaction of a blockchain. So I think that there is this kind of friction that I would like to classify with a kind of, I don't know, headline like, let's say, real interest that might be a bit delayed. At the end of the day, in 2007, when you had your first iPhone, you got excited immediately. So the real question here is when someone will be really excited to book a flight dealing in a peer-to-peer way directly with the owner of the house on the opposite side of the world. When someone will be really excited to be able to, in case a ticket for a flight has been, I mean, a flight has been cancelled, and when someone will be really aware and delighted to be able to push a button and have a 30 days, 10 days, 5 days immediate dispute resolution. So in my opinion, we unfortunately will face, but again, it's a really highly subjective opinion, also the difference between, you know, some exponential transformative technology, you know, improvements happening in the years before, when essentially they were on such topics that were of immediate interest. So these are kind of frictions that might require a wider time frame, but I can see, Mark, and that's the most interesting part, that new models that might be interesting will arise. I want to give to you and to the audience one example which makes really clear how really we are talking about, I mean, for non-tech guys, it is not sure that it will be really, really be super clear. But let's make this example. Today, we use every day our email. Maybe you use Gmail or Yahoo, or you use Superhuman if you are, or Hey, the recent one, if you are more, I mean, a tech guy. But at the end of the day, the concept of email was almost the same in 40, 50 years. I don't remember exactly when they started, but it was 70s, if I'm not wrong. Let's imagine that in the future there will be maybe chance on a token-based or crypto-based to if I want to reach out to you, Mark, and I don't know you, I might able to spend a small percentage of a token for listing my email in your inbox a bit higher. And someone could think, yes, but you are buying and buying, so economy will eat the world. It's not true. It's a peer-to-peer, direct economic incentive mechanism that will change completely. So I won't ever need to, for example, in this case, buy a ticket for a conference and to get there to meet you, or I won't need to try to write you on LinkedIn several forms if I want to reach out to you eventually. And be aware, maybe on LinkedIn I might want to spend my money for advertising there. Eventually, in the future, there will be direct methods where I will immediately pay you for your time. So this is an idea of how the world will change. In my opinion, these kind of applications that are more exciting will take probably place in 10, 12 years, probably. For deep changes on core society infrastructural elements, on even on the public sector, public courts, I think at least 15, 20.
If I've understood you, and this is really exciting, if I've understood you properly, basically, I think what you're saying is access becomes monetized. So I could say anybody who's not in my contacts on my phone that calls me, can, if they want to leave a message, they have to pay for that privilege. If anybody wants an email to get through to me and not to go to spam, they have to pay for that privilege, and I can set the price. I'm in control of my own access. And is that what you think is, are we moving in that direction?
Definitely. This is a kind of direction that it's also from a sociological and philosophical perspective really important. Even if it seems, I mean, not that important, it's crucial. So just to give you, how can I say, an idea, no? There are already in place experiences like that are, in my opinion, relevant. For example, earn.com, EARN.com, it was a journey started by a famous guy in the crypto industry, and they sold out to Binance, if I'm not wrong. Earn.com allowed people famous people in the tech or crypto space to get paid for answering to someone that was, just get willing to get in touch. So it's like if that experience proved, in my opinion, to a certain extent, that this kind of mindset might work. So let's make this example. Let's say that you want to reach out Tim Cook for a specific reason, and he is listed on what, yeah, I mean, in the near past was air.com. In that case, you might spend, I don't know, alpha Bitcoin, a Bitcoin or even more, and you will be sure that that message will be directly sent and read eventually from Tim Cook, that will be paid eventually, but I don't think he will really need to do that for answering to you. Maybe in that model, it was really interesting that public persons like Tim Cook might have decided to devolve their revenues for charity. That is something, if you think for a while, really interesting, because it enables people to manage their own time, to decide that my time is as a value. I want to allocate my time for answering to, I mean, people I don't know, and I want to devolve the revenues to charity because I feel good in doing that. So this is an example of what you were saying to me that proves that this kind of trend has been already partially proved. Now there will be, in the future, the need to scale up. Or there are also other examples in my view that are quite relevant. If I can expand with another example that makes me always really, really interested in. I think that the creators on the internet are going to be the area of major improvements in the short term, which means short in terms of 5-7 years. So yesterday, for example, you wanted to publish on Medium. Medium is an amazing platform, probably you also use it. But at the end of the day, the platform owns your own context. Then they came out with, for example, Substack. And I personally like Substack, I have my own Substack. And in that case, there is of course, a business model, but you can directly send your newsletter, your messages to your audience, your email list, and you own that email list. So if someone subscribes, you become the owner. So this kind of, you know, it's not a transformative change, of course, but I'm trying to give you examples for saying, look, honestly, I think these trends are already widely in place.
We're now in a slightly different world, aren't we? We're coming through the first wave of the COVID crisis. We're seeing courts around the world, in a sense, patting themselves on the back because they've moved into online hearings. And to some, that's not good enough. You know, to some, that's simply not what online justice is about. To some, they still see backlogs. They still see frustration. They still see paper-based inefficient processes, albeit that now that those inefficient processes have been translated into an online environment. So we're reading a lot about online justice in terms of online hearings, but there's so much more to online justice. And you are very much at the forefront of that. What do you think we should be moving towards when it comes to helping the billions of people around the world without access to justice? I mean, more people have access to the internet than have access to justice. I understand around the world. So what does the future hold in online dispute resolution, Alessandro?
My vision for the justice is, at least the civil and commercial justice, is in the private sector. So public and criminal law must be managed by public institutions because there must be constitutional traditions behind that. And that is, again, I'm not a, how can I say, I'm really a fanatic of constitutional orders, and I have a PhD in public law, so that's my background, specifically administrative law. So I'm just saying that civil and commercial law, in my opinion, should be disputed according to private, let's say, models of courts or, let's say, arbitration. So our job at Jure with the Open Justice Platform is to try to get there to the final endpoint and change in a progressive way. So my idea is, we can't today immediately, you know, completely disrupt the rules. Why? The world is not ready. So we can get there in a progressive way using the tools that already are existing. For example, the arbitration framework. That said, if you ask me where I especially what we do with Open Justice, how I see the real future of justice. On the private sector, I would say that there will be two major areas, the automated justice and non-automated justice, and both of them will be really impactful. The automated justice, or let's say technologically enhanced justice, will be able to provide faster mechanism of dispute resolution, and eventually the human judge just will be able to confirm what the machine said. That will be one area that, of course, is going to be dependent, for example, about the smart contract world. If there will be, we already had some cases, right, where that kind of blockchain-based system, that in case the flight was delayed, automatically was issuing the reimbursement. It's really simple. You connect the software with, you know, the flights, departures, and arrivals to, a blockchain system where there must be an escrow. This is crucial. The blockchain system must be carefully developed to be sure that once the assessment of the delay happens, the money is moved, and that's it. That's one simple example already, let's say, proved that it might work. So on that side, in the next 10 years, there will be a major, you know, improvement and scale up of this kind of solution. On the other hand, and we are working on open justice on that, but we can't do, and we can't start on that side. Why? Because there is no such a system, like the example I did to you, for every vertical today. It can't be in place. And even in 50 years, Mark, there will be always a need of a human, at the end of the day, judging most, maybe, or a good, amount of disputes whenever subjectivity arises. So how we are willing to solve the problem in the long term. So we don't start there, we can't start there in that way. But which is the vision that makes me really excited of what we are working on and fighting on? We create a layer for private arbitration courts to work digitally, and there are a lot of systems for ensuring non-corruptibility, and this is a network-based layer. So our vision is to bring a new kind of platform, which is based on experts, of course, that shares the value with them. So it's the totally opposite of what Facebook, right? So this is a kind of what we are doing, but honestly, this is too advanced, so maybe we should expand too much. A clear concept is, how do we see in the long term to change, at that point, to eventually change the world? I see this kind of aspect as crucial. Professionals must be paid always. So if you have to go to the hospital and be operated on your heart, you want to pay as much you can afford the surgeon to be sure that the surgeon is going to be a professional one. Of course, this is a bold statement just to get the concept passed through. The same for justice. If you have a serious problem for your family, if you have a serious problem for your business, you might not want to save, I don't know, $50 and eventually having a low quality justice experience and service. I think that justice is really a sector where quality and competence and professionalism is really crucial, therefore must be paid. How do we solve this problem where some people or some small or medium enterprises eventually don't have the money for doing that? So our answer is to build this system that, again, I'm not explaining to you today because we might have another call with some slides I will be really glad of. But our final answer is, we want to create a system of micro third-party funding, which means even today, where the counterparty is solvent for huge arbitration procedures, there exist some third-party fund entities that are willing to invest so that if the claimant is right, they are going to recoup the money back maybe in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, no more, with interest. We won't take this concept and to democratize so that if you have a small medium enterprise of South Africa or London or Paris or Singapore or even a small town, whatever, but you are really right, you can ask, of course, a due diligence activity, and the system will be funding you. So the professional side will be paid Why? Because there will be people that are, let's say, investing over 2 years on a bundle of micro disputes, and eventually, there is a risk, of course, and this is a complex model, it will take years, but eventually there will be a return on investment for them, and they created not only money, I mean, back, but also a positive social impact. So that's what we love to try to do, of course, because it's a quite hard journey. But my vision is, it's extremely interesting to me to get the best of the financial models and leverage them on a token model and create a transformative, hopefully positive change, even social change, thanks to them. In this case, essentially is to democratize and, letting people to get a reward for risking their money for funding micro disputes or small disputes or medium-sized disputes. So that's the key, my vision about how we want to disrupt justice in the next 15 years.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. And I think we could talk about that all day, all night, all week. We've covered a lot of ground today. We've covered smart contracts. We've covered DAOs. We've covered online court. We've covered it all. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you today, Alessandro, and thank you very much for your time. This podcast is being produced by the Astana International Financial Centre and moderated by the chairman of the AIFC Law Tech Advisory Council, Mark Beer. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to hear more information on the Astana International Financial Centre's Law Tech Advisory Council, please follow us on LinkedIn.